very excited to be here. Happy that all of you were able to make it here as well. Last year, we had a great event, except for the snowstorm driving in, which was pretty crazy. I like to say that my wife and I on the drive-in aged about 6 years, maybe 10. I was not so worried, but my wife worried enough for both of us, so it worked out better this year with none of that. I'd like to start with a story. I'll share a quick story with you. I was 12 years old. It was the first year of the United Church camps, and I was going to Camp Heritage for the first time. And as a 12-year-old boy in Southern Virginia, this was the first time I got to get away from my parents. I'm one of seven kids, right? So as one of seven kids in nowhere, Virginia, I didn't get to make a lot of choices. I didn't get a lot of opportunity to do my own thing at 12 years old. So now I'm going to camp. And camp, for a 12-year-old boy, for me, meant I get a little bit of freedom. No mom and dad. I can make choices. This is going to be great. And I show up to camp. Anybody got any idea what choice I made? Well, I decided not to shower the entire week at camp. Because that makes sense, right? Why would you waste time as a 12-year-old boy taking showers, right? I'm having too much fun. Didn't matter that it was summertime and 90 degrees and we were doing activities and running around and doing all kinds of fun stuff. So here's what happens if you don't already know. If you're a 12-year-old boy and you don't shower for the entire week, by the end of the week, you are the smelly kid at camp. And that's who I was. I was the smelly kid at camp, right? Here's the problem with that. When you become the smelly kid at camp, one time, for a decade, people would come up and be like, Matt Earls, Matt, you're the smelly kid from camp. You were that smelly kid that 1 year, right? It's the first year at Heritage, so let's start it off with a bang. Let's have the smelly kid, and that's me. That's who I was. And when I say 10 years, I will tell you, from the time I was 12, I was probably early, mid-20s when people finally stopped walking up and going, Matt Earls, Matt, smelly kid at camp. One time. It's unfortunate, but that's what happens. That was my story. And so what I want to talk about today is the difference between your future and your past. That's what I want to talk about. And we're going to spend a little time telling some stories and trying to have some fun here. But we want to go through that. So I want to share with you, before we get into this, a great quote, a famous quote. Albert Einstein says, if you want to know the future, look to your past. And that's a pretty standard statement. If you want to know what's going to happen in the future, you look to the past and you get a rough guide of what's going to happen. And I would say, just personally, that makes sense. If we look at society as a whole, we can use the past as an indicator of things that are going to happen in the future, or at least get an idea. Because people don't change, right? Society doesn't really change. We can look back to things that happened 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, and we can see similarities, and we can see how it's going to end. And then we can take those things and say, if we keep going down that same road, we're going to have the same results. Because you can get to the same results by doing the same thing. So you look to the past if you want to know what's going on in the future. The problem, the challenge, is that we don't always apply this to society or the population of people. We apply this to individuals. So what we do, whether we admit to it or not, is that we say, well, someone who's made a mistake in their past, someone who's sinned, who's done something they shouldn't do, we allow that to color the present and the future. Because we have this saying, this thought process, you know, you've done that once, you're always going to have the tendency to do that again. And so we apply this individually. In my case, jokingly, right, just as a joke, I was the smelly kid for a decade, right? Didn't matter that I never did that again. I'm going to tell you, just for reference, I shower every day now, okay? I do. I think it scarred me, right? I think it scarred me. But we do this to individuals. And sometimes we do it to ourselves. We allow things that have happened in our past to color how we view ourselves today and how we view ourselves in the future. So what I want to do, we're going to go through the story of Jonah. We all know the story of Jonah. And I'm not going to turn to each scripture. We're just going to talk about the general overview of Jonah. So the story opens up. God tells Jonah, you need to go to Nineveh and preach to the city of Nineveh. 45 days, the city's going to be overthrown. And we all know what happens. Jonah says, absolutely, God, and he goes straight to Nineveh. Well, that's clearly not what happened. Jonah goes the absolute opposite direction. So Jonah is told by God, you need to go to Nineveh and you need to preach to the city of Nineveh. And what Jonah does is he goes down to Joppa and he gets on a boat and he heads off to Tarshish. Now there's some debate on where Tarshish is, right? There's a little bit of a debate where it is, but there are some decent evidence that Tarshish was potentially in Portugal. It was a Phoenician city way, 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 way away from Nineveh. Jonah goes as far as he could away from Nineveh. Now keep in mind, this is the known world for these people. So when you go all the way to the far coast and you're sitting on the other side of the Atlantic, that's the edge of the world. Jonah's not running to the neighbor's house. He doesn't go in his basement. Jonah's getting as far away from Nineveh as he can. Why? Why is Jonah running away from Nineveh? What's the problem? What's going on? It's pretty standard, pretty simple. Jonah, go preach to that city. And Jonah goes, no problem. And he gets on a boat and goes as far away as he can. Well, the challenge for Jonah is what's going on in the background. Nineveh is the capital of Assyria. Okay, so when Jonah shows up, Assyria is the major player on the world stage in that area. Assyria, at this point, when Jonah shows up, has been a major empire for 1,500 years. And as the first major, major empire in this area at that time, the Assyrians like to rule with fear. Okay, that's what they did. So, not to give you a boring history lesson, I love history, I could talk about it for days, right? When Jonah shows up, he's a couple of generations after some of the worst, nastiest kings of Assyria. Guys that would go and take over a city and kill a lot of people. In fact, there's not a lot of kids here. Most of the kids are in the kids' class. So the teens, you're going to get a little more of this than the kids would, right? When you rebelled against the Assyrians, they didn't just come back and take over your city. They would come back and they would take the men of the city and they would literally skin them alive. And then they would post the skin on the wall so people would look at it for days and weeks and months. They were nasty. They did terrible things. And not only did they do terrible things, they highlighted it. Okay, so if they had social media at the time, they would have been posting it on Facebook so everyone's, because that was the message. They wanted everyone to know, don't mess with us. Just do what we're asking you to do. That was part of their process. That's how they ruled. They used that intimidation. So when Jonah is told to go to Nineveh, it's essentially, and you guys will make fun of me for this, what God's essentially doing is saying, I need you to go to the Death Star and talk to Darth Vader and the Emperor and get them to change. Like, just tell them the Death Star is going to blow up. That's what they're doing. So here's Jonah. Jonah's being told to go to Nineveh. Jonah knows Nineveh is the capital of Assyria. Assyrian capital is not a good place to be. If the king is willing to do that to people who turn against him, what do you think is the possibility of the king doing not so nice things to this guy who shows up and says, you better change. You're about to be overthrown. It's not going to end well. Right? That's the mindset. That's what's happening. So here's where we go with that, right? So Jonah has put the whole nation, the whole city of Nineveh, in a box. Nineveh is the smelly kid at camp. Their past and what they're doing is dictating what they're doing today and what they're going to do in the future in the mind of Jonah. So Jonah has put them in this box. They can't change. They'll never change. They're dirty Assyrians. They're evil. And so Jonah goes. We all know the story. He tries to flee. You know, he's thrown in the water. The fish swallows him up. He gets spit out on the ground. He finally goes to Nineveh. He preaches the message he's supposed to preach. And lo and behold, they change. They change. And Jonah, the book of Jonah records, God saw their works, that they turned from their evil ways. So they changed. They put on sackcloth and ashes, and they changed. And we all know the story, what happens next. Jonah is furious. He's furious. He's mad. He's upset. God, I knew this was what's going to happen. I knew this is what was going to happen. Now, we don't get this story in the beginning of Jonah, but we get it in the end. So Jonah says, Lord, isn't this what I said when I was still in my country? For I know that you're a gracious and merciful God. I wish we had this story on the front end. Because he's alluding to a conversation or something that he said to God in the beginning before he ran away. Right? And he's saying, God, I knew you were merciful, and I knew if you were going to give them mercy. And they don't deserve it. That's what he's saying. They don't deserve it. They shouldn't get this merciful God allowing them to live, because they're the smelly kid at camp. They're the bad guys. They're evil. They're not supposed to be given mercy. They're not supposed to be given a second chance. And God does this great thing where he says to Jonah, am I supposed to destroy this entire city who doesn't know their left hand from their right? So God didn't put them in a box. Jonah did. Jonah put them in a box. So here's what I want to talk about with that. Here's the lesson I want to bring out of this. Are we putting ourselves in a box? Now keep in mind, I'm primarily talking to the teens and the young adults in the room. And you're going to make mistakes. You're going to sin. You're going to do things that you shouldn't do. And sometimes we allow the things that we've done in our past to dictate our current situation and our future. I'd say it a different way. And here's where I might get myself in trouble, so just bear with me, okay? Here's what we do. In the church, we have this culture that we're the good guys. And that's okay. That's okay. Because we should be the good guys. What happens, though, is we don't give a lot of room for mistakes. And so, as a young person, as a teenager, when you make a mistake, sometimes it can be compounded. Here's what I mean by that. When I was 16 and I was doing things I shouldn't do, and my friends who were not in the church were doing things they shouldn't do, they didn't have guilt or pressure because it wasn't a sin to them. Do you get what I'm saying? For me, I had grown up in the church. I'm like, this is not good. Like, this is a problem. And it was. And that guilt's a good thing, because that guilt can help lead to change. It can help lead to development as a person. But sometimes we allow the idea that, well, you should know better, therefore something's wrong with you. And you talk to enough young people, what you inevitably come across is people who have this idea, this tendency, where they say, I'm clearly not called, or I clearly don't have something because of what I've done or the mistakes that I've made. And then they put themselves in the box. They put themselves as my past is going to be an indicator of my future. And they do what Jonah did, and they go, well, they're always going to be Assyrians. They're always going to be the smelly kid at camp. That's not true. You are more than your mistakes. You are not equal to the lowest point in your life. You're just not. Let's try to say it a different way, okay? You know, in the beginning, when God created man, he formed us out of the dust of the ground. So he takes dust and makes all of us. Can you imagine what God can do starting with you? Your mistake isn't dust. God can make great change in our lives.
He has. He's done it. The Bible is full of examples of him doing that. But we have to make sure that we're not allowing our lowest moments in our lives to dictate who we are today and who we'll be in the future. We can change. We will change. Again, I promise you guys, I shower. I do. I shower. So I want to look at another more positive example in the scriptures. Okay, so we talked about Jonah. Let's talk about Rahab. We all know the story of Rahab, right? I hope we know the story of Rahab. So Israel's about to cross the Jordan, and they're about to start their conquest of the promised land, right? And Joshua sends out the two spies, and they go into Jericho, and they spy out the city, and they end up at Rahab's house, and Rahab saves them. Rahab does, you know, looks after them, takes care of them. Here's what Rahab says, though. Rahab talking to the spies, Rahab says, "For the Lord your God, he is God, in heaven above and on earth." So the spies show up, and Rahab recognizes that God is the true God. That's how it's recorded. That's how it's recorded. And everyone else is afraid of Israel. They're all afraid. And Rahab, it doesn't record that Rahab's afraid. It records that Rahab believes that your God must be the God because of what has happened to this point. We've seen what's going on. Right? The stories have preceded them. And Rahab doesn't give credit to Israel. She gives credit to Israel's God for the things that have happened to this point. So she shows up. I mean, they show up to Jericho, and she says, "I've seen your God. He is God." And she believes. And because of that, her and her family are saved. Now, let's just think about the story for a second. Let's step back for a second. Rahab is a Canaanite who's living in a city that the God of creation, the God of the universe, has said that city needs to be wiped off the map. God has pronounced judgment on Jericho. Rahab believes in God, given a second chance, because of her belief, because of what she does. Now, Rahab is a harlot. That's not a good thing, okay? I won't get into the details, everybody, but it's not a good thing. So she's a Gentile. She's a Canaanite who has been slated to be destroyed. She doesn't have the best past. Her profession is not the best profession. And you know what? It didn't matter. She didn't allow her past to dictate whether or not she could change. When God knocked on the door in her life, she answered. She recognized. And then she becomes one of the great matriarchs in the Bible. The stories of her son, Boaz. She's in the lineage of David. She's talked about throughout the... She becomes this great example that as we talk about, you know, running with faith in our lives and needing to be encouraged, she becomes this great example of encouragement of your past doesn't dictate your future. She didn't allow that to color what she did moving forward. You know, we get all these examples of change and allowing people to change, and I want to make sure that if you take nothing away from this message, other than I don't shower that often, right? What I want you to take away from this message is don't allow your worst mistake in your life to dictate who you're going to be in the future. Remember, God takes dust and makes mankind. Imagine what he can do taking you into the future. Because he's going to facilitate that change. If you allow it, if you don't put yourself in that box. I am the Rahab of showering now. I know it. I'm the Rahab of showering. I'm never going to do that again. It's a great story. I learned from it, right? But I didn't let it dictate who I was going to be. So as you grow and develop, and as you come out of your teenage years into being an adult and beyond, you learn from your mistakes. Try not to repeat them. Try not to do them in the first place. But when you do, don't allow you to don't question whether or not God can help you. Don't question whether or not you've been called. Don't question whether or not this is who I'm going to be. Because we do that sometimes. And we do that with others. We say, well, if he's done this sin in the past, he's going to do it again in the future. We can be more. Be more. Allow that change in your life. You know, when we're running with faith, how's it say it? Lay aside the sin that's so easily ensnared. Lay that thing aside. Lay that old thing beside. Put it behind you. Put it behind you and move forward. Because you're more than your worst mistake. Don't be the smelly kid forever. And have a great winter weekend.